You're listening to the Gridiron Growl Podcast from ChopTalk.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Gridiron Growl Podcast presented by ChompTalk.com. I'm your host, Ethan Badowski. Joining me as always is Brian Fox Jr. Quick turnaround for us. We recorded Thursday of last week. We're recording now Sunday night. And I think I jumped on it early, Brian, because I had a lot to say and I wanted to make sure that I didn't get into the work week and kind of forget all the things that I wanted to say about this performance. Gators obviously get absolutely trounced by Georgia, 43-20, I think that was the final. I don't even remember. Final. I don't think I saw the final whistle. I was watching, hoping Miami would lose to Virginia by that point. But look, it was, I'm not going to say it wasn't unexpected. It was certainly disheartening, that's for sure, because we were talking just before we hopped on and started recording about how all of the progress we feel like was made. And this has happened a couple times this year, you know, all of the good feelings that you had have kind of gone out the window now. It happened against Kentucky and, you know, there was a lot of good momentum coming into this game. There was a bye week for everybody to rest up and get healthy, get re-energized. And I don't think energy was a problem, Brian. I just think that Georgia showed, as we said on the, look, we talked about it on the podcast heading in, Georgia's much better. There's a enormous talent gap. Billy Napier spoke to the talent gap after the game, something that I want to get into later that I thought was important for him to say. But the talent gap was evident everywhere on the field, and the Gators just got whooped by a team that they're trying to match. And Billy Napier said it best, they've got a long way to go to get there.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this was just simply a game that proved that, you know, the talent disparity is out there and it's real. Despite what fans may feel or think going into a game, you know, we're all kind of going into it with our hearts. Yeah, we have a chance. We never had a chance. No. That game was over before we ever stepped on that football field. I saw an interesting stat online that Georgia started 11 5-stars and 9 4-stars out of their 22 starters. I mean, that's insane. Florida can't say anything like that. No, yeah, insane. I mean, like I said, in that sense, this game was over long before it ever started. And we were just kind of kidding ourselves. Like we were just talking before we jumped on here about, dude, last week we were talking about Florida possibly winning the East. The hell were we thinking?
It had to be mentioned because it was possible, right? Like heading into the game, if you somehow found a way to win, you know, it was possible. And I think the Gators, look, games are, you know, there's the old saying, games are won on signing day, right? And this game was certainly won on signing day. I do think any chance the Gators had was taken away when that fourth down, when that, you know, they got the third down with Khalil Jackson. It was overturned. They go for it. You know, you can argue the merits of the play call. If the play call works, Billy Napier looks like a genius, but it didn't work, so he looks like an idiot. Like, you know, it's just... But again, but, even but if Ethan, you go down and score,
but I want just because play calling has been such a thing all year, if you can't trust your offensive line to get you 2 feet, backing them up another 5 yards is probably not a good idea. Not your best move there. Yeah. Look, I understand both sides, I really do, but man, that play call, I'm just like, you know what? We hear about the you know, me being an Eagles fan, I hear about this.
Push, brotherly shove,
it makes the game so easy or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, why aren't we doing that in that situation? Yeah. I just think that there was better options and that it didn't really give Florida the best chance in that situation.
Yeah. I don't want to get bogged down and like debate a play call because the play call didn't work. So it doesn't matter. The point is that if the Gators get that first down like they should have, they never should have been in that situation in the first place. It was a first down, clearly. And then if they go in and score 14-10, like, I still don't think the Gators win, but it's certainly a different game. And you could be talking about a much more competitive game. But, you know, what was one thing we talked about? There were so many things. All I kept thinking during the game was, wow, Brian and I sounded like geniuses on this last podcast.
Yeah.
Because there were so many things that we talked about that came to fruition in this game. We talked about not being able to turn the ball over and give them short fields. the game was over because you gave them a short field on a turnover on downs. They scored a touchdown. Then the very next drive, they had a strip sack, fumble recovery, and they go in and score on the first play. So it, and that was the game, Brian. That was 21. That was 24-7, just like that. Or you know, it was 10-7, and then it was 17-7, and then it was 24-7. So that was it. The game was over right there. So that was one of the biggest things we talked about, was the Gators could not lose the turnover battle. And if you were going to turn it over, you definitely couldn't give it to them. You know, I think it was like a combined 45 yards that they had to get after those two turnovers. I know the second one was 11. I don't know what the first one was, but like, yeah, it was, you know, such a short field that they had to get, and they did it easily. And the game was over right there. It felt like 2021 where, okay, the Gators are in this. It was 3-0, you know, and then in 2.5 minutes, you know, whatever, they scored 21 points. Like, same thing kind of happened here. It was really quick. It was like 5 minutes, and all of a sudden the game was over. And it was really disheartening. And it just, that was another area where the talent disparity was on display, Brian, right? Was how quickly Georgia can make you pay because of their athletes. The rushing touchdown where Edwards gets to the edge and is just gone. Like, nobody could cover him down the sideline. He was just gone, untouched to the house. Like, it showed itself all over the place, Brian. I mean, it was so obvious in so many areas. The discipline. You know, one thing I talked about was these fucking reverses that I hate reverses. Like, unless you have Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, like the Dolphins and Raheem Mostert, Devon H., you should never be running reverses. And the Gators don't have the weapons to do that because they're going backwards. And Georgia, they're more disciplined than anybody. They stay in their gaps. They understand their assignments. They stay in their assignments, and they're faster than you. So trying to play on the edges is not a good idea against this team. And, right. And I, you know, we spent 45 minutes last week trying to figure out how do you beat them. And we said there's no recipe, and it just got shown because the Gators tried to go deep, and every deep shot they took, there was two guys on the receiver. They tried to play underneath, and they couldn't get anything going because they couldn't block up, you know, or they tried to, you know, do the short stuff, and Georgia kept everything in front of them. They tried to do the quick hitters because if you hold the ball for too long, the pass rush gets there. Again, they kept everything in front of them. Right. There were guys right on them making quick stops. And then when they try and do the stuff more down the field, the Gators can't block up because they're so overmatched up front. And that, again, you know, we talked about it last week, how that talent gap, the Gators do not have a bigger talent gap on their schedule than facing Georgia with, you know, in the trenches. And they got exposed, man. I mean, it was a disaster.
Ethan, I want to ask you, because to me, it was such a pivotal play when Florida goes for it on 4th and 1 from their own, I believe they were on the 31, 32 yard line. The first play of the second quarter, you're down 10-7 and you're going for it on your own 30.
Yeah.
To me, I can't understand the rationale behind there. It's far too much that you could lose versus what you gain from it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I'm kind of new school on this, Brian. Like, I think line it up and get a yard. Like, you should just be able to, if you're going to win a football game, you need to be able to get a yard when you need it. And so I thought, I understood where Billy Napier is coming from. Like, yeah, it's 10-7, but there was obviously a little bit of desperation, a little bit of playing with nothing to lose. And it's what you have to do when you're overmatched in that manner. Like, they were so overmatched and it was so obvious. And, yeah, you know, like I said, I'm kind of new school in terms of I liked the aggressive call because you got a first down taken away from you. So go try and get it and keep the momentum going. But yeah, it is a tough spot because now that I think about it, like, they could have just punted it away, try and pin them deep and, you know, maybe you keep it at 10-7. But look, I think Georgia's scoring there no matter what. I think this game is kind of a, you know, goes the way it did no matter what. They certainly didn't help out, but I think that when you're that team and you're that overmatched, like, I understand the desperation and the aggression from Billy Napier to just say, we have to take every opportunity given to us to try and flip this game on its head. And who knows, man, if they break that play, like, you know, and it goes big and then you go down and score a touchdown and it's 14-10, like, it's a completely different ball game. I still think no matter where you put the puzzle pieces, the puzzle ends up with the Gators getting blown out by Georgia. And I simply think it was just because of how, again, this game was won on signing day. I really, really right. believe that.
See, that's, for me, it's kind of like, this is another one where it's like that play calling issue that we've seen. At no point in this game, whether it was early on or late, did that run up the middle work.
Yeah.
And to do it at such a critical juncture just felt like an absolute moronic decision from your de facto offensive coordinator and Billy Napier there. One thing that hung out to me or that I saw online was Mark Long from the Associated Press shortly after that says, stupid money loses money.
No, you're right.
And I mean,
right.
It's hard to argue that.
You're right. You're right. It's an aggressive call. And it's, you know, that's the hot topic around college football and the NFL, right? Is teams are going for it on fourth down more than ever. And when you got to pick the right spot, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that was the right spot. You know, and we can second guess it all day, but I mean, you know, again, they shouldn't have been in that situation in the first place. I think that's the frustrating thing to me is they had the first down clearly. And again, you know, and any way you slice it, really, Brian, I mean, you know, for me, you weren't getting any push up front. I mean, it looked like at one point there were three drives in a row where it was like, you know, I think like three and out, three and out, three and out. And the Gators just kind of looked like an FCS team, like playing an FBS team, you know, where they just couldn't get anything going. Their quarterback was, you know, running for his life. They couldn't get any push up front to create any holes in the running game. I mean, ETN popped a couple nice runs. So did Montrell Johnson, especially like into the second half. And the Gators do deserve credit for fighting hard in that second half and getting a couple touchdowns and, you know, playing some pretty good offense and the running game got going. But I mean, it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare all over the field. And you know, I want to get some of your thoughts before I kind of go into kind of have like a, you know, some shit I want to get off my chest in terms of just the feeling about this rivalry. But, you know, tell me some of the other areas where you really noticed, you know, what we're talking about here with how this game was won on signing day.
Well, secondary issues, I think, were a big thing again. And it seems like any team that kind of torches the Gators or puts up big numbers is having a field day with our secondary. And frankly, we thought that might have been a strength coming into the season, I think. You know, not to call anybody out, but that's exactly what I'm going to do here. Jason Marshall, what is going on? This guy was projected to be a top 10 pick before the year. Yeah. There's a good chance he's going to come back. You know, the way that he has played this year, it has been rough. And to see him, and look, I'm not going to say that he gave up on that first touchdown, but
it wasn't a whole lot of effort.
There definitely wasn't a whole lot of effort. And it wasn't just him. I mean, we're going to single him out because he's a guy that a lot of us see as a draft pick and, you know, one of these guys that should really be setting the tone for the rest of the youngsters.
He was the only five-star Dan Mullen signed.
Right.
Or that's still around, you know? Right. So it's like, yeah, he has a lot of pressure and a lot of expectation on him for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I have issues with the secondary. I thought for the most part, the linebackers are doing what they can, but it doesn't matter if you're not getting any help up front. It doesn't matter if the secondary is getting burnt. I actually really like what we've got at linebacker.
Me too. I think it's the best unit on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're set up for the next several years. And I think that's awesome. But again, does it matter if you can't get any push up front? And we knew that this was going to be a test, that the trenches are where Georgia football has been built through recruiting. And that's exactly what you want Florida to do. Yes. Believe it or not, and I know it pains a lot of Gator fans, that's exactly what we're trying to emulate there. And that's what Billy Napier's doing. But it's going to take time. And this was just this just kind of put it into perspective, I think, for a lot of people that, okay, we're still very much in a rebuild. And, you know, maybe here we are 6-6, 7-5, something like that again this year.
You pointed out that first touchdown, dude. It just goes to the speed and strength. Like, Ladd McConkey is outrunning the entire secondary.
Yeah.
They're just bigger, stronger, faster at every position. And this flows into something I wanted to talk about that Billy Napier talked about after the game, which was how important the evaluation and recruitment of players is to what they're trying to do. They're obviously recruiting very well right now, Brian. They've got the number three recruiting class in the country coming in this year. Hopefully they keep that together. They need to recruit a little bit better up front offensively. The offensive line recruiting isn't great, but the defensive line and the defensive recruiting especially has been tremendous. Some skill position guys coming in. Obviously, Eugene Wilson was a great recruitment by this, and Andy Jean as well. Great recruitment efforts by this offensive staff. But he mentioned it. He said, this is the blueprint. Georgia is the blueprint. That's what we're trying to chase down. That is what we want to become. And we've got a long way to go to get there. And it was clear, dude. And I'm tired of it. Like, I'm exhausted by since I went to college, dude. I have not had a single Florida Georgia game going into where I feel confident that the Gators are going to win. Like, 2020 was the year where I thought we had the best shot. Obviously, we ended up winning that game. 2019 as well, I thought we had a pretty good chance. But then 2019, the talent gap became evident. 2020, obviously, we go in and win that game, and that was fucking awesome. But 2021, it was right back to reality. 2022, it's I haven't been able to go to a Florida-Georgia game where I've actually been able to talk shit to Georgia fans.
Yeah.
And right? And actually, like, give them some back and forth. It's always, oh, you know, you guys are going to beat our ass. And they're saying, yeah, we know we're going to beat your ass. And it's at the point where it's not even a rivalry anymore, Brian. Like, honestly, yeah. Like, if the game wasn't played in Jacksonville, it would just be another game on the calendar. Georgia fans look at Florida like their little brother. They don't fear Florida at all, dude, at all. They don't even think about us, to be honest with you. Like, I've seen it when you go to those games. They laugh off. They know exactly what's going to happen when they go into that game. They knew exactly what was going to happen yesterday. Gator fans did too. And I'm fucking sick and tired of it, to be honest with you. Like, I'm ready. Like, I want to give Billy Napier the time, and I want to be patient. And I'm willing to be patient because I see the signs on the recruiting trail. And he knows what he has to aspire to, which is Georgia, and how he has to do it, which is evaluating and recruiting players. So that gives me some hope. That's the only thing that gives me hope right now. But, like, my patience is running out, man, because I'm sick of it. And it's going to be the same thing next year. Like, next year, we're not going to be, like, we might be a little bit closer if we bring in, if we hold together this top three recruiting class. But they're just going to get the number one recruiting class again. So...
Well, that's what
two,
I was going to tell you. I was like, right? the number yeah. three class right now is really cool, except Georgia's number one. So right. We're gaining ground. We're actually still losing ground despite.
Right. So it's like, yes, we can get closer to them, but it's going to take a while to get there. And I'm, like I said, man, I'm tired of it. Like, I'm tired of losing to Georgia. I'm tired of feeling like Georgia looks at us like they look at Vanderbilt and Kentucky and Missouri and Tennessee. Like, it doesn't even feel like a rivalry anymore. Like I said, like, Brad Nessler before the game was talking about how, there's been some great moments, but not a lot of close games, not a lot of great games. You know, some of these games have been pretty lopsided, and now they've won 6 of 7, or was this 5 of 6, or had they won 5 of 6 coming in? I'm trying to think.
Six of seven. Yes.
Yeah. So they've won 6 of 7 now. It's becoming like a Tennessee, the way Florida views Tennessee, right? Like, it's a historic rivalry, obviously. They play the game in Jacksonville. It's a huge event. It's a big deal. But the game is in competitive. It's not like a rivalry the way that, like, Florida and LSU has been the last 15 years.
No, you're absolutely right. And if that game wasn't played in Jacksonville, that'd be a noon kickoff at either one 100%. Of these home stadiums.
And what's it going to be next year when the game isn't contractually obligated to be on CBS? Like, I don't know if within the SEC ESPN deal, maybe they've given, Florida Georgia is still going to be the 3:30 ESPN game. I hope so, because I love the 3:30 window for Florida Georgia. I think it's awesome. But, and hopefully because of the cocktail party and everything, like, they'll, the obligation will be there. But yeah, that's a great point. What would this game be if it weren't contractually obligated to be at 3:30? Would it be 12 o'clock on it might still be on ESPN because it's Florida Georgia and it's two big powerhouse names, but it just doesn't have that feeling anymore. And I'm over it, man. I'm over it. I want to be there already. Like, and maybe I sound like a spoiled brat because I grew up in the Tebow era, but like, it's ridiculous at this point. And I'm over it. I want to get back to where this is, what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the biggest, we said going into the game, right? The winner of this game is in the driver's seat in the SEC East. That's how it's supposed to be, except every year Georgia wins by 20 and continues to be in the driver's seat. They're a perfect football team, Brian. They're perfect. How do you beat them? Like I'm going to go over it again. You try and go quick pass, they keep everything in front of you. You try and go long, they cover it up, or they don't give you enough time.
Yeah, or sack. You
know, right, or it's a sack. On defense, you blitz them, they block it up, you sit back and drop it in coverage, and Beck sits there and picks you apart all day because guys get open. Well, so it's just
not
like,
only that, but on top of that, those guys play such a disciplined game.
Yes, dude.
And I mean, crazy. The penalties are one thing, but those guys know their assignments and they work to their assignments and they do it perfectly. Kirby Smart, I mean, look, as a Florida fan, we hate the guy. I get it. The guy has done it. He has done it right, and he's brought the right guys into his system. He has done exactly what we want Napier to do. But we've got to apparently give Napier time, which that's something that I find up for debate.
It's hard to do, man. It's hard to do because you see the results paying off immediately with other programs. Like exactly. You had other programs that were recruiting well and they were getting results on the field. The Gators are recruiting well, but they're not getting results on the field right now. And they've got a tough schedule, man. And it's only going to get hard.
Next year's schedule is ridiculous. Next year's schedule is a
fucking minefield. It's ridiculous.
You're
going
to throw all these freshmen in. What I kind of wish is, not that I think you should go full in on transfers, but you know, getting one or two impact transfers, that's not enough. Not if you're going to actually compete. No, it's going to be hard for a lot of these freshmen to develop when all they're doing all year is getting their ass beat.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, hey, look, put some leadership back there. Some guys from the portal who could make a difference. You saw that with the offensive line last year. Guess what? Mm-hmm. Most of these guys are back, but you lost the one leader that they brought in from the transfer portal in Osiris Torrance. And all of a sudden, this offensive line looks awful.
And look at what happened when the transfer portal this year. They brought in Maskua and they brought in Damian George. And George has been one of the worst players on the team. I mean, I hate to say that about college kids. They get paid now, so it's a little easier to criticize them. But it's been a rough year for him. He gets beat, he lets up penalties, he doesn't look like he's trying very hard sometimes. And so yeah, it's again, it goes back to that, not just recruitment of player, but evaluation of player.
Right.
So it's not just recruiting players and getting them on campus. It's making sure you have the right players with the right skill sets. They're going to fit your team and fit your scheme.
But if we get 15 transfers, we have a better chance of hitting on five of them.
That's right. And especially with so many freshmen coming in, hopefully Mertz is going to stay. I mean, and he's the perfect stopgap guy to get to Lagway.
He's not really an NFL kind of guy, no. so I can't imagine he would go anywhere.
And he's having such a good year, and he seems to really like it here. So I see him coming back and being that perfect stopgap between us, you know, him and Lagway. But, man, it's tough right now. I mean, it's just, you know, I just kept thinking back to that talent disparity and just how much we have to go. And how far we have to come. And yeah, they're the best. It's not just the talent, dude. They are the best, most well-coached, well-disciplined team. Like, they're just perfect. They're a perfect team. You know who their defensive coordinator is? I didn't even know until I saw him on the sideline yesterday.
Is it Bobo?
It's fucking Will Muschamp, dude.
Oh, I did know. The defensive coordinator. My bad.
Yeah, it's Will Muschamp. Like, he's... Say what you will about his time at Florida, he's one of the best defensive coordinators of the last 20 years, right?
Oh, and he left that defense in really good shape.
Yes.
When he left.
Yeah, he recruited the hell out of the defense. We had great defenses while he was here. He went on to have good defenses at South Carolina and Auburn and wherever. And now he's coaching Georgia. Are you kidding me? They don't need that. They've got all the talent in the world, and they've got one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. It's just ridiculous, man. They're the standard, and they're probably going to win a third national championship in a row, which hasn't happened since the 1930s. I think they said on the broadcast, they're a perfect football team. They're perfect. They do everything right, and they're impossible to beat. And there's a reason that nobody's beaten them since 2020 in the regular season. They lost an SEC championship game in there somewhere, but they still won a national championship. So it doesn't matter. Like, you know, like they're just a perfect football team. They do everything right. And it sucks for the Gators that it's their number one rival, that this is the team that you're going to be compared to most. This is the team you got to play every year. It's the biggest game on your schedule every year. It's a measuring stick. It's for the division. You know, divisions are going away next year, but this is obviously a game that's going to remain on the schedule. And it's just tough for the Gators. It puts them in an unfortunate spot that they have to play this team every single year and have it be the biggest game on the calendar.
Yeah, I mean, the future of this program is something that honestly, and I don't want to get into a heavy conversation about it right now, but I think you need to be concerned. We talked about the schedule. We talked about the recruiting. At what point is that schedule going to hamper the recruiting? Yeah. If Florida goes 7-5 this year, let's say they go 7-5, that seems kind of realistic. If they go 7-5 this year, if you look at the schedule and assume that there's no big differences in the roster, minus some freshmen coming in, we're looking at best again 7-5.
Right.
At what point are the recruits going to buy out and say, well, you know what?
That's the tough thing about next year, Brian, is that the Gators can make huge steps forward next year and still end up 6-6, 7-5, 8-4 because of how difficult the schedule is. And that could be the end of Billy Napier. He's not going to survive another year where he's got to win 9 or 10 ball games next year or show significant improvement.
It's very possible he's going to hit the transfer portal a little bit harder this year.
Not to look
for those, you know, third level guys or whatever, but to look for those guys, the graduate seniors that maybe can make an impact right away. Because he needs to. That's what Florida's needed the last 2 years, and we haven't had a whole lot of that.
Yes.
And I'll give him credit. The ones that we have had, you know, the guys that he got from Louisiana, at least, they did the Trail talent evaluations and, there, right?
Centers, yes.
But yeah, we definitely need more of that. But it's something that, I mean, you look at that schedule.
It complicates things a lot, dude. It complicates things a lot. It makes things a lot more difficult in terms of how you evaluate. You're not going to be able to evaluate him properly because he's going to be overmatched in more than half of his games. And it doesn't, it's not, it's UCF, it's Miami, and Florida State. You've got all three of your in-state rivals next year.
Yeah, you've got one FCS school. That's Samford, which, by the way, Samford, last time
remember
they were
that?
Here, that was pretty scary.
I was at the Penn State game. Thank you. I just kept looking up on the scoreboard at the Penn State game, and my brother and I were like, we were with our cousins, one who went to Belmont, one who went to Penn State. They like UM from growing up, so they didn't give a shit. And we were just like, dude, oh my God, like this can't possibly happen, right? Like this is not actually going to happen. And thank God they put, what was the final? 57?
I think it was 70-52, if I remember right.
I think it was something like that.
But we were at the game and I was just like, and for the, through the third quarter, I thought that Samford was going to win that game.
thank God I was
not. And
then
fortunately, the fourth quarter, they made, yeah, it was just, woo.
70
that was
to
a
52.
Really bad. Yeah,
yes, 70 to, man, I think Emory broke a bunch of records in that game.
Yeah, so the defense, mistaken. Just not good records.
28 of 34, 464 yards, 6 touchdowns. He added another on the ground. Damian Pierce had 2 touchdowns, and Malik Davis, salute, had another touchdown.
Yeah, what a night in the swamp, man. I'll never, ever forget that game.
All right, well, before we get dragged down into bad memories like the Samford game and other bad losses from the last 10 years, let's go on and move ahead and start talking about some of the other sports going on right now. Obviously, we know the two big ones we've been talking about a lot, volleyball and soccer. We're just going to brush over these volleyball results because, again, we talked about it plenty on the last pod, and we're on kind of a quick turnaround. Gators over the weekend dropped their first of 4 straight matches and 3 straight against top 15 teams at home to Arkansas, number 10 Arkansas. They dropped that in straight sets, so certainly not a great result there. And they've got a big week coming up again. Just the big ones keep coming. They got number 12 Tennessee on Friday night, and then they've got number 15 Kentucky on Sunday. So sandwiched between that is the Arkansas game. And that Kentucky game is actually on ESPN at 3 p.m. on Sunday, if you want to watch that. Brian, we'll move forward to soccer now. Soccer, their season is actually officially over. The Gators did not qualify for the SEC tournament, so they drew with South Carolina. South Carolina almost won the game on the last kick of the game, but the girl was ruled offsides, so it ended in a scoreless draw. So the Gator season is now over. Obviously a big step forward for the program. You know, take us through a little bit of your evaluation on this year for Gator soccer.
Yeah, I mean, just real quick, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but Gator soccer made a significant turnaround from a year ago when they recorded just 1 point in conference play. This year, they finished with 10 points and a 2-4-4 record. So you get 3 points for wins and a point for a tie. Overall, the team finished 6-5-6. Because they finished with a tie the other night, they did need Tennessee and LSU to lose. Tennessee ended up beating Vanderbilt, and LSU tied against Texas A&M, which kind of ended the Gator season. But again, it was a really good season. The team actually ended the season on a 3-match unbeaten streak with a win and 2 ties. And there's a lot of contributions all around. Just earlier today, actually on Sunday, the all SEC teams were named, and defender Daviana Vaga was a first-team All-SEC defender, and freshman Megan Hiddenkamp, a forward, was second-team All-SEC. She was also named the co-freshman of the year. So, I mean, there's good things coming for this program.
She had most of their goal output this year, right?
Hiddenkamp, yeah, she's a stud. I'd have to look up the number, but she had quite a few goals, including in the last game that they – the Vanderbilt game, she had 2 goals herself. So this team's going to get better. They're not going to continuously miss the SEC tournament. But we saw significant growth just from a year ago in Samantha Bohan's first year. And we're going to learn a lot more about this team when the signing period comes around next month.
Yeah, this is obviously, like I said, you know, slow and steady is going to kind of win the race with this program. And this is a huge step forward, and it's going to be a lot of baby steps, but the baby steps are good ones, and they took a lot of them this year. Obviously, getting to the SEC tournament would have been another big step for them. Couldn't quite get there, but hopefully they'll get there next year. You know, like I've always talked about, I love how we care about all of our programs at the University of Florida, and all of our programs are supposed to be of the highest quality and the highest order and the highest class. And it seems like we're kind of back on to that with soccer. Things got away from us there for a year or two, but it seems like we're starting to move in the right direction, especially in the high class department, we should mention, because a lot of things were going wrong in that area under the previous regime. But now with Bohan in there, it seems like things are kind of moving in the right area, and the team's young and going to get better. And they've got a stud up front, which is how you're going to get better in soccer for sure. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Other than that, not a whole lot going on. Brian, I do want to look ahead a little bit. Obviously, we touched on it last week. This is the salute to service game, I think is what they're calling it. Saluting those who serve, something along those lines. Yeah. Basically a military appreciation night with Veterans Day ahead. Gators pulling out the black jerseys. We touched a little bit on the decision to do it before the year. What's your excitement level like for the black jerseys? Were you in on it, or were you not really in on it?
I am a huge fan of black jerseys. I don't buy into that you can only wear your colors, blah blah blah. Well, guess what? One of my biggest criticisms of the UF athletic department, and I swear there's not a whole lot of them, I hate that the UF logo has a primary color that is not amongst their school's colors. That is one of my most biggest annoyances. I hate that there's green in that color, and I get why. I absolutely understand it. But green is not a color of this university. And with as much disdain as many of these fans have toward Miami, we don't ever want it to be part of our school colors. The swamp green jerseys, I had a huge problem with. I absolutely hated those. I was nuts. That was awful. And then we lost.
Dude, that's the only Gator game during my time in college that I left purely because of the quality of the football game. So I left games early because they were blowouts. I left games early because I had to work. Somebody was tired. Somebody was sick, whatever. That was the only game that I left purely because I could not subject myself to that quality of football any longer. It was such a terrible football game,
Ethan,
and we looked so bad.
Just because this is hilarious, let me tell you, there's twice that I've left a UF sporting event early. The first time it happened was a early season basketball game, and Florida was up by like, 40 points on, whoever, Samford, maybe something like that. And I told my brother, I was like, hey man, let's beat the crowd out of here. Let's go get something to eat. And sure enough, we leave and I put it on the, on the SEC Plus or whatever. And I'm watching it. And this dude with one arm comes in and makes this ridiculous reverse layup. And it was like the number one play on ESPN that year.
We're getting, oh my God. We're getting dragged down in the mud here. But listen, my brother, when he was in school, when that kid was on the team. And my brother said that he went to Southwest once or twice. I don't know. It could have been multiple times. And that kid would go. I forget his name. It's Jacob something. And yeah, he would hoop. Like, he would put it on kids at Southwest. Like, absolute, was an absolute baller. But obviously he was limited by, but yeah,
I always joked with my brother. I was like, we can't leave early because, you might miss something amazing. And of course we did. The only other time it happened, we left for a soccer game back when they played at the track and field stadium. And I swear, I kid you not, Florida made a kick like as time was expiring to win the game. Wow. And I just look at my brother and say, guess what, man? We will be at every game. Yeah. Like, we are staying until the end, no matter what. So like, I even tell the girlfriend now, I'm like, I'm sorry, but I know we're up by 45 points, but who knows what could happen. Somebody might catch it with their feet and I'll be like, I can't believe I missed that.
So all that is to say, we're both fans of the black uniforms, man. I like them too. I wish they had a gator head on them somewhere. Like, I think it looks a little weird without the gator head right here, but yeah. I think they're nice. They're clean. I think they'll look great. I wish they were going to be under the lights. Like, I think they're going to look a lot better. They would look a lot better under the lights in the swamp, but they're going to look great. Like, our colors mix, both black and blue and black and orange, are awesome color combinations. Yeah. So put them all together, they're going to look great.
I think they did a good job with the jersey itself. I mean, they didn't overcomplicate it. They made it like the Tennessee one I felt was just ridiculous. And I get the Miami one, that neon.
Did you see the Miami one? Miami had like weird
gray. Oh, that was that green one. Yeah, I only saw that because that was the game that they blew it.
Yeah, they did take a knee. Yeah. No, that was disgusting.
That was not a good look.
You can nail it or you can get it really wrong. Luckily, the Gators, I think I think they did a really good job with these. So, yeah, it's nice to see that they did a good job. I think they're going to look great. I'm really excited to see them. Certainly going to be hyped up for the game. Hopefully, it'll be cool. So I can actually wear black. Otherwise, I'm not going to do it. I got to get myself, I got to get my hands on one of the black jerseys just to have them. But Brian, one thing before we get out of here that I want to mention, you mentioned basketball. Dude, right around the corner.
Yeah, actually, we're going to go big on basketball, I think.
Yeah, actually, in fact, next week we can do a bit of a season preview because this Thursday is the orange and blue scrimmage. That's held in the O-Dome at 7. So I guess that's going to be each team taking, going to split the team up and play a scrimmage. I don't know if we mentioned it, but the Gators went down and played a secret scrimmage against Miami in Miami, not in front of anybody. And they beat them. They hit like Riley Kugel hit a big shot, I think, to win it, like with a few seconds left. I'm really excited about Gator basketball this year and we don't have to go into it too much now. We can save it for next time and do really like a breakdown because I do want to study the team a little bit more. But this season's right around the corner, dude. I mean, like I said, the Thursday is the orange and blue scrimmage. This is Thursday right before the Arkansas game. And then the Monday after the Arkansas game, there we go. Get it started. Loyola Maryland. There's so many Loyolas. Yeah, Loyola Maryland is coming to the O-Dome.
That's different than the Loyola we lost to a couple years ago.
Yes, correct. at 8 p.m. on Monday night. I might have to go to that. And then later that week, they go up to the Hall of Fame series in Charlotte. They play Virginia. They've got some good early matchups on this schedule, Brian. They've got Virginia. They've got Florida State, obviously. Florida State comes to Gainesville. Pittsburgh, and then either Baylor or Oregon State in the NIT season tip-off in Brooklyn. Wake Forest is on the schedule. Richmond's on the schedule. Michigan's on the schedule. That's all before you get into conference play, and we know the SEC is always going to be good. So, yeah, very excited. Very, very excited for college basketball this year. I think Golden recruited the portal great this offseason. So I'm excited to see with an injection of talent. I don't think last year's team was very, very talented, but I do think that they were well coached and the offense looked a lot better from the Mike White era. So yeah, I'm really excited to get this basketball season started, man. I can't wait.
Yeah, man, I hear you. I'm excited to get into it. Yeah, dude, I'm excited to see Riley Kugel. I think the guy is going to be a stud this year.
Yeah. It was huge for them to get him back. For them to get him back, because he's going to kind of be the guy that, like, they were just really missing last year. I thought, like, Keontae Johnson, if he had stayed around, would have been the perfect player for last year's team, a guy that everything can go through.
Yep.
And I think that Kugel's going to kind of be that guy this year that they really need. And a lot of talent coming in from, like, mid-majors in the portal. A lot of the top mid-major guys ended up at Florida. So, yeah, it should be a very
exciting.
They're
going to have to gel pretty quick with that schedule. Yeah. That non-conference schedule can be brutal, man.
That's a tough non-conference schedule, but that's always exciting because you learn a lot about the team quickly. And they'll be challenged hitting into SEC play. All right, Brian. So again, volleyball, they've got Arkansas. They've got Tennessee and Kentucky coming this weekend. Obviously, the Gators. So action-packed weekend at UF. Friday, number 12 Tennessee volleyball facing off against them. Saturday, the Gators host Arkansas. That's a noon game. And then Sunday, Gator volleyball hosts number 15 Kentucky in the O-Dome. Any final thoughts, brother?
No, man, that pretty much covers everything.
All right. Excited to watch the Gators all dressed in black on Saturday. Hopefully they will get a win against the Arkansas Razorbacks, get back on track. That's all for us. We'll see you after the next game, hopefully following a Gator win, and this roller coaster ride continues. Until then, go Gators.